When a mother and daughter were found stabbed in what appeared to be a ritualistic way, there was only one man in town to blame. The trial was sensational, with bored housewives showing up just to hear what would be said about the Witch of Newcastle. But he says his persona was all an act, and some say it was really the woman's husband who did the crime. This is the story of the Cadence murders, the satanic priest who says he was just pretending, and the husband who may have gotten away with it. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here. I'm a Midwesterner who now lives in New York City, putting my writing degree to use by researching true crime cases that interest me, and hopefully you. And hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. Today's case is another one straight out of my comments section. How could I resist when @BobaMan5400 wrote, "It begins as a murder case that quickly spirals into ... quite a story." The thing is, there's almost nothing out there about this case. Like, People magazine never did some big write-up. There's no Wikipedia page and no local news reports. And this kind of case is sometimes really fun for me to research because I have to use only newspapers from the time. But I just want to preface this that I may be pronouncing everyone's name wrong and I don't have a lot of photos. But what I do have is satanic panic. The Indiana Gazette in Indiana, Pennsylvania, first reported the death of Kathleen Kathy Cadence on July 12, 1978. The morning before, a baby was crying at the 25-year-old's home in Newcastle, and apparently it went on so long that the neighbors got concerned. A friend noticed the back door open a little bit and went into the house. She found 2-month-old Robert in a portable crib on the first floor in a wet diaper. On the second floor, in a bedroom, Kathy's 4-year-old daughter, Dawn, had been stabbed in the neck and back 17 times. In the attached bathroom, Kathy was face down, dead from a gunshot wound. She had also been stabbed 17 or 18 times. Kathy was nude except for some of those little footlet socks, although there was no evidence of assault. Kathy and her daughter had been dead 5 to 7 hours, so poor Robert must have been crying for a while. He wasn't harmed at all, other than the loneliness. A bullet removed from Kathy's head showed that a small caliber gun had been used at close range. Because the door to the house hadn't been broken, the police thought maybe Kathy knew her killer and let them in. Authorities began interviewing family members. Kathy's husband, 29-year-old Lawrence, known as Lou, had been at work at the time of the murder, so he was off the hook, and there were really no obvious suspects otherwise. Authorities said the couple had lived in the area all their lives but had just moved into this house less than a year ago. They kind of kept to themselves, but not in a negative way. More that they were just very family-oriented and were close with their brothers and sisters but didn't go out a lot. They had been married for 6 years, and Kathy kept a tidy house inside and out while Lou went to work at a factory. He took a lie detector test early on, but the results were inconclusive. It took until February 1980, a year and a half, for an arrest to be made. And it wasn't Kathy's husband, but 2 other men, Frank Costell Jr. and Michael Atkinson. An anonymous tip led the police to Michael, a 28-year-old who was already in jail for assaulting a woman. He admitted that, yes, he had been at Kathy's house the morning she and her daughter were murdered. But he said he only went with his friend Frank and stayed outside. He didn't touch Kathy. He said Frank, on the other hand, came out of the house with blood all over him. And to the police, Frank did look like the perfect suspect. They said he basically lived in a tomb. He had plastic skulls hanging from his apartment ceiling, black curtains blocking out the light, an altar with black candles, and books on devil worship. A friend said Frank had a rough childhood with an abusive dad and had been confused about his sexual identity. He dropped out of high school, joined the army, served in Korea, and later became a carnival sideshow performer named Frankie Francine, half man, half woman. And somewhere in the middle of all of that, he became interested in black magic. It sounds to me like Frank was one of those guys not suited for a quote-unquote nice small town and the expectations to fit in that can come with that. His apartment was known as the hangout spot for people who weren't so straight-laced, people who wanted to drink and smoke and, you know, lightly dabble in some satanic cultiness. Frank said he was a high priest and he allegedly led rituals and animal sacrifices and even a sham marriage ceremony where he wed another man. One friend said his followers were people who were afraid of him and what he could do to them if they tried to leave his little cult. He said he could take them out of their bodies if he wanted to. They worried that if they talked to the police about him, he would simply walk through the bars of his jail cell to come after them. And then Frank did escape one day for a little while, but it was only because someone accidentally left the doors open. Authorities said the group Frank led was less a cult and more Spirit Halloween. Bats hung from his light fixtures, but they were rubber. And he said he kept two vultures, but they were really parrots. But even if it was all for show, it worked. Everyone in town knew him as a witch. Frank's diary talked about seducing young men at the mall by telling them Satan could solve all their problems and getting them to come back to his apartment. He would tell the young men about Lilith, the first wife of the Bible's Adam, who dressed her male demon followers as women to seduce men. It turns out Frank allegedly liked to dress as a woman himself. At an early hearing for Frank and Michael in the case of Kathy's murder, a woman testified that she saw the two of them at Frank's apartment once, and Frank was wearing women's red bikini underwear. She said at that same apartment, she saw Kathy's husband, Lou. This would be kind of scandalous to a certain type of person no matter the time, but you have to remember that this was 1980, so especially scandalous. At this preliminary hearing, Lou said under oath that he didn't even know Frank. But books about witchcraft and the occult were found in both of their homes with the initials LK in them, Lou's initials. Prosecutors alleged that Frank and Lou were not only friends, but romantic partners. Jailhouse snitches said Frank complained about Kathy getting in the way of his romance with Lou. One inmate said Frank bragged about having carved up Kathy and her daughter. A friend said Frank laughed when talking about the murders. And Michael, the guy who supposedly stood outside while Frank was doing the killing, said Kathy messed up a drug deal and had to be punished. At his trial in October 1980, a jury found him guilty of first-degree murder and third-degree murder. Michael was also later convicted of killing his landlady in January 1980. 52-year-old Frank got a separate trial and a change of venue in 1981 when it was determined that Lawrence County probably wasn't going to serve up an impartial jury. In their opening statement, the prosecution said they would show the jury that Frank had influence over people and had a quote-unquote homosexual-type existence. The defense decided not to present an opening statement at all. As one of over 50 prosecution witnesses, Kathy's mom took the stand and said that her daughter had always been afraid of her own shadow. As a kid, she would flush the toilet and then run out of the room in case she'd get sucked into the pipes. She gave away a copy of The Shining while she was pregnant in case it was bad luck. She kept all of her doors and windows tightly locked, even on beautiful days. But her mom said that during their last visit together, Kathy seemed especially disturbed about something. She said Kathy wasn't the type to complain, so she wouldn't talk about what was wrong. She said Kathy and Lou had been having problems in their marriage since 1974, when he was convicted of indecent exposure. Lou testified that he left for his foreman job at about 6:40 a.m. on the day Kathy and Don were killed, but claimed he couldn't remember a lot of other details. Like, he allegedly told the police that he was at business school class the night before the murder and asked one of his instructors about murder cases. Now he was saying he didn't remember that. And 2 days before Kathy was murdered, Lou took out the trash naked and was arrested when someone saw him. His landlady apparently threatened to evict him. But he said he didn't really recall that threat. And when asked about the affair he was having with a woman at work, Lou said Kathy found out, but it didn't really affect her. One of Frank's friends testified that Frank told him about drinking coffee at Lou's table the morning of the murders while Michael went upstairs with Kathy. And when Michael came back down, there was blood on his shirt. Michael, of course, had said that Frank was the one covered in blood, so they were basically implicating each other. It was kind of interesting that this person specifically mentioned going upstairs, though, when Kathy was found on the second floor. But one inmate testified that Frank told him about the murders and detailed the blood on the walls, insinuating that Frank was in the rooms where Kathy and Don were killed. Local kids testified about how they went to Frank's apartment to hang out and listen to music, but were scared of his talk of being a satanic priest. A pathologist testified that the stab wounds on the bodies appeared to be in a pattern, made methodically, not like someone in a rage. A young man testified that Frank told him he stabbed Kathy and Don from the neck down as human sacrifices, 17 times as required by a ritualistic killing. A woman said she visited Frank in the hospital once at the same time Lou was there visiting, and that she also saw Lou later at Frank's apartment. She said Frank once offered to dispose of her husband for her for $25. And just like Frank had testified against Michael at his trial, Michael testified against Frank. He said Lou and Frank were in bed at Frank's apartment the morning of July 11th when he arrived. Frank was supposed to have gotten some pills from Kathy, $105 worth, but they were never delivered. So Michael, Frank, Lou, and a fourth man went to Lou's house to straighten things out. Michael said he heard an argument upstairs between Kathy and Lou where she said she had flushed the pills down the toilet. In her anger, she also said that neither of the kids were his. Then a gun went off, and when Michael went to the second floor of the house, he saw Lou standing there with the weapon. Kathy was dead. And Frank then emerged from the bedroom where Don was with blood on his hands. Michael says he left with the fourth man, but quickly returned so they could grab anything that might incriminate them. That's when he supposedly stayed outside like he originally told the police. The fourth man then came back to the car with a bloody butcher knife, which they went to throw in a lake. That fourth man later took his own life, or was killed by Frank, depending on whether you believe the official finding or the rumors. Of course, people suspected that Michael was just incriminating Lou and Frank on the stand to be able to strike a deal with prosecutors. But one thing seemed to ring true. Michael said the fourth man brought along his dog, and hairs from a white German shepherd like his were found on a rug in Don's room. Kathy and Lou didn't have a dog like that. When it was the defense's turn, they called witnesses who painted Frank as an easygoing guy despite the small fact of the devil worship, a generally nice guy who liked to joke around. His niece said he babysat her as a kid, and she now let him babysit her daughter too. She said he gave her gifts like rosary beads and a tapestry of the Madonna and Child because he respected that she was Catholic. One friend testified that the cops coached her to say Frank was like Charles Manson in her statement. When Frank took the stand, he had shed his Jesus hair and shaggy foot-long beard and was wearing a light blue suit and tie. He confidently said that he neither knew Kathy nor killed her. He said he also didn't know Lou and that he never did drugs. He said he was really, quote-unquote, more of a bisexual than a homo, and that Michael wasn't his boyfriend, just an acquaintance. He said he loved reading about religions but didn't follow any of them. And when people in town started calling him a witch, he played along with it for fun, put on a good show. He said people would stop by just to see his weird apartment, and hey, he didn't mind. They usually brought free beer with them. He said his cult was just people discussing religion, and he never told anyone he had any sort of powers. He said he didn't remember where he was on the morning Kathy and Don were killed, but he usually slept until about 1 p.m. But despite the good guy act, on January 29, 1981, a jury found Frank guilty of 2 counts of murder in the first degree. He was automatically sentenced to life in prison, and the judge recommended no parole. On February 17th, Kathy's husband, Lou, was finally arrested and charged. But a year later, in February 1982, he was acquitted. There really isn't much reporting I could find with details of the trial, maybe because the prosecution wasn't really working the exciting Satanism angle this time. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported that Lou turned pale, screamed, and nearly collapsed when they showed him pictures of the crime scene on the stand. I think the idea being he couldn't have been the one to commit the crime if he had such a reaction to it. Lou's son, the little boy crying from the crib when his mom and sister were killed, was told his dad had been working at the gas station for a year while he was stuck in jail. Lou said his family and his pastor kept him going when his anger at being framed got the better of him. He was positive Michael was guilty, but said he wasn't sure about Frank. And he maintained that he really didn't know Frank despite those witness accounts. He said he'd tell his son about his mom and sister someday and let him read the court transcripts and decide for himself. The last I read of Frank, he was in prison, semi-comatose, quiet and skeletal under a thin blanket. A local author visited 3 times while he was locked up and said that Frank was generally charming and funny. He said Frank acted meek when he was around people with authority, but authoritative around people he could control. The author said Michael, on the other hand, was called the worst prisoner by the warden. While Frank was at least an interesting character, Michael was a thug, slow and simple. It looks like Frank died in 2001 and Michael died a decade or so later. Lou remarried in 1984, had more children, and became a grandfather and a great-grandfather. He died in 2020 at the age of 71. This is definitely a case that leaves me with a lot of questions, and I'm most curious what you think about the possibility that Lou had nothing to do with the murder. On one hand, you have a lot of people who implicated Lou. Under oath, Michael said Lou was the one who killed Kathy, although his first version of the story he told police didn't include Lou being there at all. Multiple people unrelated to the crime said they saw Lou at Frank's apartment and while visiting Frank in the hospital. Frank had those books with Lou's initials in them. But Frank and Lou both insisted that they didn't know each other. But if you believe that, then why did Frank and Michael choose Kathy to kill? Was it random? I guess there's a possibility that if money was tight like her mom said it was, Kathy was selling pills to Frank. And maybe Lou had nothing to do with it. Maybe. One thing I found interesting is that Lou's nephew testified that he rode to work with Lou on the day of the murders. There is absolutely a chance that Lou murdered his wife and daughter early in the morning and then went to work as usual, but it would take some real resolve to just act normally. So I'm not exactly sure what I believe, and I'd love to know what you think. Frank's trial was such a big to-do at the time because of the Satan and the cult links. Newspaper headlines said things like lurid drama, and people were showing up to court just for the spectacle of the gay witch. So I'd like to end this with a little more about Kathy and Don, who I think sometimes got lost. Kathy was a graduate of Newcastle Business School, and it sounds like she was the type to figure things out when she needed to. With money being tight at the house, she sewed her own clothes. She liked reading and drawing and always kept things neat. Even the police noted how neat her dresser drawers were at the crime scene. Her mom thinks she might have enjoyed having a job, but it didn't seem like Lou wanted her to have one. Dawn was already learning the alphabet and how to write when she was killed. She loved writing down the names of people's pets she knew. One friend said she hoped in a way that they didn't know what was happening to them that day. She said, "I hope Kathy was so hysterical she didn't know what was happening to her. She was always so frightened, you know, and here it was, her worst fears coming to life. I hope wherever Kathy is, she's finally at peace. Dawn, too." Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.